What I would like you to do, for those that have Bibles, I have something that's not on your notes. I just want to look at just for a couple of minutes out of Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40, that's an ancient written text. Most of you have never read anything that ancient in your life, even in history classes, but the Bible's full of things like that, but we just take it for so commonplace. But this is written somewhere around 1000 B.C., 1,000 years before Christ, 3,000 years before the United States of America was even here. And yet these words have survived, and they're here in this book, and they're pretty powerful words. And the whole context of this Isaiah 40 is this ancient nation of Israel that God has used, a real people, real nation, but God has used that throughout the ages as kind of a metaphor as how God works in each one of our lives individually. And as you read their story, it's kind of like you go, how can they be so dumb? Look what God just did for them, and they've already forgotten what God did for them, and they're already chasing out doing dumb stuff again. And then you realize, hey, wait a minute, my life's been kind of like that at times. See, so God kind of knew what he was doing, but there's a point here where the people really deserved what they're going to get, but God's just finally saying, you know, enough of this. And the whole point, the first two words of the chapter 40 of Isaiah is comfort. Comfort my people. That's what it's about. Because when you look at the idea of what is God's will for my life, behind that many times is a concern. There's an anxiety. There's maybe a fear. You don't know what to do for sure or where to go, and you're a little bit bewildered. Life can be that way a little bit. And so when you ask a question, it can be very bright, and it can be very positive, and it can be, wow, I wonder what God's will for my life is. I am so excited just to see where we're going to go. And that's good, and you should have that. But many, many times, it's like when you're at crossroads in your life, or there's been something difficult happen in life, or there's something that's inexplicable to your definition and your dream of what you thought life should be. And then we're coming and we're asking, what's God's will? I'm not feeling fulfilled, you know, or whatever it is. So in Isaiah 40, I just want to give a couple of foundational things here, because there's two important questions to knowing God's will in your life, and it starts with God, but it also starts with us. And so Isaiah 40 actually answers the question, who am I? And if you look at verse 6, actually go down to verse 7, it basically does this. And all the people here, now look, if you look at the hills of California right now, they're kind of that brown-yellow color, right? And so, you know, I love the green hills. You know why? Because I don't have allergies. So, but all you all that have allergies, you know what? When the hills turn brown and yellow, you're rejoicing. You go, finally, finally. But how it's described here, this is how people are described. It says at the very end of verse 7, surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flower falls. But it goes on to say, but the word of our God endures forever. Now, I want to just jump over to one other passage here also, because it's not just who I am in context of what's God's will. We have to understand who we are and how we fit in this. But the other part of this also is really understanding who God is, really understanding who God is. Because if you look at this, if you really understand who you are, I did a memorial service this Friday, and a wonderful lady lived to the age of 84, wonderful steward and a great example. And there's a little group of people there, and they mourned her, and that's wonderful. But, you know, most of you here don't know her, but God does. And in God's eyes, she is a giant. I'm sure of it. But the amazing thing is this. What God brought for me to share with them was, for me, when I need context, when I need perspective, sometimes what I do, if it's a nighttime, I walk out of my home, of my house, into the front yard or in the backyard, and I just look up at the stars. I just look up and just start looking at those things. Because what happens in life is we keep our eyes focused here. We keep it focused in front of us. We're either down pacing, looking at the ground, or we're looking up, or we're looking at things around us, or we're sitting there and we're looking at things in little boxes, and TVs and whatever, but we're always focused here, always focused on things. And I love industry. I love goal setting. I love keeping busy. But sometimes when all this stuff is just kind of coming in on us, what God has invited me to do is just kind of stop and look up. And then I see stars that the light that I'm seeing is maybe millions and millions, tens of millions year old. And yet God has created all of this, and I am looking at those stars on what? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about really where we are right now? We're on this gigantic planet. I mean, if you've ever flown around the world, you know just how big this planet is for us. But if you put it in context of our solar system or whatever, we're on this tiny little thing, and we're just sitting on the surface of it in this gigantic dark space out there. Have you ever, you don't think about things like that. Okay, that's all right. Yeah, but this is the passage that struck me. I had forgotten this was here. It's also in Isaiah, and in context of what's God's will, understanding who God is, understanding who you are. This is foundational. And this is what it says in verse 25 of Isaiah 40, because these ancient people had forgotten who God was, and they were so focused on what's God done for me today. Because I've got my life, my agenda of how things should be as you scurry around on this little planet whom God has provided gravity and air and water and your heart beating, and you just think you've got life, by the neck, and you want God to supplement that. But this is what God says, verse 25. To whom will you compare me? He gave some examples. Or who is my equal, says the Holy One. Now listen to this. So I didn't realize I was actually doing a biblical thing when I was get stressed out and I go out and I look up at the stars. This is what it says. Lift up your eyes and look at the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls, listen to this. If you didn't know this, guess what? And calls each one by name. I have a couple of framed photographs of Hubble pictures. I should have brought one today. Hubble pictures of like, it just looks like giant swirly, misty, colorful things. But really, those are gigantic clusters of stars. And actually, this picture is gigantic clusters of galaxies. You know, we live in the Milky Way galaxy, right? And there's like, you know, hundreds of millions of stars in that one galaxy. But yet, this is a picture at the edge of what we call the known universe. Stars that are just, when the universe was just a little baby. It's only a mere 1 billion years old. And yet, according to this passage here, I get it as poetry. I get it, but the whole point is it's talking about the expansive hugeness of God. That God not only knows every single galaxy that we could even ever witness or see, but every star, and he has names for every single star. Is that a big God? And yet he's mindful of us right here, and we as individuals are pretty focused on our own needs, and we're really absorbed with what am I going to do? What am I going to do with that? What's God? And we're evoking the name of God for our, in God's eyes, incredibly precious and important life. But in the eyes of other billions of people, it's yeah. Who's that? Who cares? I'm focused in on me right now. And we're evoking the name of this God who, by the way, named every star ever in the universe. Who am I? Who is God? Who am I? Who is God? But it doesn't end there. Who's named all the stars? He's named every one of them and called each one by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. But here's the point of all this. He goes on down. He goes on down in verse 28. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is an everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. I'm not going to ask how many to raise your hands here that say, I'm tired. He won't. God, the point here, God doesn't burn out. God doesn't burn out. And his understanding, no one can fathom. Okay? So that is really foundational as we look at this very simple teaching that we have here today. Because it says, God's ways are not our ways, and his mind is not our mind. But it also goes on to say, what are men and women, actually the expansive word in the Bible is, what is man, that God would even think about us? But he does. He doesn't just think about us. He deeply loves and cares for us. Every single one of us here on this little planet, in this solar system, in the Milky Way galaxy, and he knows who's even in physical pain in this room right here, emotional pain. He knows those that are at critical crossroads and decisions in your life, and he is so mindful of each one of you. I think he has this gigantic cosmic wallet that he goes around and shows the angels, and he just goes, look at, aren't they great? And the angels run away, goes, oh no, here comes God, and he's opening his photo wallet. You know, run away. Because God just so delights in each one of us here. He does. Way more than you do in yourself. But when you think about, you know, it's renewed for me, when I think about just this warm, mushy, just almost sickening, gushy feeling, whenever I see a picture of any of my grandkids, let alone my kids, it just oozes out. And then when I run into another grandpa or whatever, and, you know, we don't even have to say a word. We just go, how's it going? I'm going, yeah, boy, yeah. and God so delights. Can you get that feeling of what you're feeling a little bit about? Some of you have been blessed with maybe grandkids. God so delights in each one of us. So, who am I? Who is God? What's God's will? What's God's will? I have just some wonderful foundational to even exploring that question for our lives here. But I hope that you have a deep reverence for who God is. And when God directs you, when God commands you, it's because he has and sees so much potential in each one of us, but he knows there must be some criterion, there must be some prerequisite, there must be some foundational things that are occurring and happening in our lives in order for God's will to flow through us and to where we will receive from that incredible fulfillment. So, but what actually happens so many times is this. We don't really want to ask the question, what's God's will? This is what we want. We want God to be our consultant. We want God's input. But we want ultimate veto power. Isn't that true? It's kind of like, you know, it's a crime on the stock market because somewhere they wrote it as a crime because some really crafty people started to say, hey, if I could get some inside information that other people don't know ahead of time before the stock market opens up, I'm going to have an advantage. And that's kind of what we want to do many times is we kind of want to craft what our life is, and then we want God to come in and season it with his godly wisdom because we just don't want to screw up our lives. But it's my life. And so once in a while, when we don't have enough information, we want to evoke the wisdom of the God of the universe to come into our little life on this little planet. And really, we want to manipulate God. And we have a long history in humanity of doing that. You know how we do that? We have a whole pattern. Even from the earliest days, there was something called the Oracle of Delphi. Most of you don't even know what that is. But for 1,000 years in Greece, there was a special temple, and people would go there from all over the known world, and they'd pay huge treasures to this priestess to try to get some kind of angle on, powerful kings would go there and go, should I go to war or not go to war? Are we going to win this battle or not win this battle? Should I invest in this company or not invest in this company? Should I marry so-and-so or not marry so-and-so? All of these things, throughout history, people have done that. Alexander the Great the most powerful man at his time, would submit himself to the oracle predictions of these priestesses. And, in the Reagan White House, it was established, Reagan the president, but one of his advisors, actually Baker, wrote in one of his books about how astrologers regularly dictated the president's schedule almost every day. It was kind of a little scandalous thing, whatever. Fortune tellers, we've heard of that, palm reading, tea reading. By the way, if you're a follower of Jesus, don't be doing that stuff. There's a foundational assumption of some kind of power behind that, but it's a created, some kind of cosmic, thing they're saying, but we're talking about the creator. Rely on the creator, okay? If you're a follower of Jesus, don't go reading the astrology column in the paper, all right? Just kind of a side thing, but the motive in all of this, listen, is trying to influence or harness divine power to glean wisdom or inside information in order for your personal agenda. So that's different than asking, what's God's will? To ask, I want God's input on this, but I want to have the final say. Do you see the difference there? And so what's going to be foundational today is understanding this. Isaiah 45:9 says, does the clay say to the potter, what are you making? And guess who's the clay and guess who's the potter in that metaphor there? Yeah, we're on a spinning wheel, okay? And the metaphor is allow God to shape us the way that he wants to shape us. So, and we're always, it changes all the time about what God's will is. If you're a young kid, you might be thinking this. I remember thinking stuff like this as I was trying to have God in my life. God, should I go out for football this year? Or in my school, we had fall soccer. Or should I go out for soccer? Or, should I play tennis? Or, should I chase that girl and see if she'll be my girlfriend or not? Or, God, should I cut one class or three classes today? Really, I would ask questions like that. And it's usually three, God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the Trinity. So, yeah, sad but true, you guys. But you have all this stuff, job or career, you start the graduation thing. What are you going to do after you graduate, Oh, I'm going to go in the military. Oh, yeah, what branch? All of these decisions. Am I going to go to college or am I going to go to college? What are you going to major in? What am I going to do when I get out? Where am I going to find a job? Where do I want to work? She looks cute. Should I marry this guy? Should I marry this girl? Are we going to be able to have kids? If so, how many kids are we going to adopt? All of these things. Should I buy a car? What kind of car? We have all of these decisions. Am I going to rent? Are we going to buy a car? If so, where are we going to buy? It just goes on and on and on. Where should I invest this? Should I retire? If so, when and where? And so sometimes, have you ever played games with this? I have played games like, same things like, God, if you really want me to continue in this direction, then I pray that all the lights for the next 2 miles will be green. Have you ever done stuff like that? And if you're not sure, then have a yellow light come before, just all of this stuff and let the stop sign turn green and so you have all of these weird little things, or you can kind of collect things up in the pros and cons, and that is if things seem to be going well, this must be God's way, or if it's difficult, this obviously can't be God's will, because it's gotten hard. And so you kind of stack up pros and cons. If it's easy and going well, it must be God's will. If it's going tough and tough times, must not be God's will. I shouldn't have ever married her. See? And so you can play this game. Just kind of a side thing, like concerning a soulmate, there's just a lot of weird teaching out there. I mean, some people, and you see it on movies sometimes, about they're in this cosmic swirl, is that one person out there that's your soulmate. I know of a I'm not going to say her name, but there's a famous movie star that actually divorced her husband. Nothing was wrong, except in some of her new teaching, she found out that there was actually a soulmate for her. And though she liked her husband and loved her husband, it wasn't really her soulmate, this just unique person that just uniquely fit everything of who she was and she with this person. So she ran off with this other guy that lasted a couple of years, okay? But this is the deal. If you have even teachings like this soulmate, what if you blow it? What if there's that one person in like 3 billion, and then maybe you think you see that person, you know, on a train or something, but you don't work up the nerve to actually talk to them, and then they walk out of your life. Well, you've just blown it. Forget about it. You know, you're just single the rest of your life. You know, and that is actually God's will for many people, is to be single, and He gives them a unique grace to be able to serve Him that way. So let's look at this foundation then as we come together, and that's where these two little guys come into play here. They're really close for the sake of our camera, they just finished up the Women's World Cup, and so kind of in honor of that, but these are kind of like supposed to be soccer goals, okay? But it's really hard, I know. not very many goals are going to be scored in this soccer deal, but the deal behind that is these are kind of like the foundational pillars, and in your notes now, you can write some things in, because now that I laid this great foundation for the whole series, there are some really important things, and there are three wills of God. Write these in. There's the providential will of God, and that is, there are certain things God's just going to do. It was God's purpose to bring Jesus Christ to this earth. No one is going to stop that. It's God's will that through Christ, that Christ die on the cross. It was God's will that Jesus Christ conquer death, raise again from the death. Nobody could stop that. It's God's will that Jesus is going to come again someday. It's God's will every tear is going to be wiped away. There will be no more pain. There will be no more sorrow. There will be a new heaven. There will be a new earth. And nothing can stop that. Okay? It is God's statement that it is appointed unto all men once to die, and after this to judgment. You cannot cancel your appointment. God, you know, I appreciate you wanting to get with me, but I just can't do that right now. It ain't going to happen. There's God's providential will, but there's God's moral will too. And there's just certain things where you can kind of do things and go, is that wrong? Well, you know what? God has some very clear non-negotiable things in God's moral will. We're going to look at that a little bit more today. Then there's God's personal will also. And so the more we get to know the providential will of God and the moral will of God, the better we'll discern God's personal will for each one of us. And so the two foundational poles here are God's providential will and God's moral will. You know what? You can try to move these things around, but it's not going to happen. And then within here is God's personal will for you. But if you try to finagle outside of the pole, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. Because you see, you're like grass, and you're going to wither someday. And you live on one tiny little planet in this universe. For some reason, God delights in us. He loves us dearly. But you're going to be here. You're like, we just had the 4th of July. Each one of us here, we're like a sparkler. And you light it, and it just sparks and sparks and sparks until it doesn't. And then what do? We toss it, and we light another one. But man, when it's there, it's just flaming. But our life is like that. But God is gracious in all of this. So let's look at this idea of the moral will of God. There's just a couple of things on this to give you now to kind of wrap things up here. The moral will of God, the first thing here, we sang a song on this, but it's the idea to be holy within our lives. It is God's will that you should be, here's a big word that a lot of you have never heard before, that you should be sanctified, sanctified. And hagiosmos is the Greek word for that. And what it means in our heart, in our motives, in our mind, that there becomes a state of purity. Because our basic nature is just to have a potty mind, to be honest with you. Our basic nature is to chase after things and to feed things in our minds and our hearts that just are not good for us. And this is the whole thing of allowing godly thoughts to come into our mind and to help us. And to know God's will is to buy into God's vision for our life, because we have our own thing of what that should be. And so there's a renewing of our mind that needs to take place for us to be able to really hear and desire God's best personal will for each one of us, because it fits in God's providential will and God's moral will. But what we want to do is define things outside the lines there. But you have to understand, when God has a moral will for you, how much he loves each one of us here. And he does deeply. So 1 Peter 4, 2 and 3 says this: as a result, he does not live the rest of his earthly life for evil human desires, but rather for what? What does it say there? But rather for, that's underlined, ready, read it with me, rather for the will of God. Now, I would like everyone at the video venue, and now that you know where we're at, I want you to engage with me on this. This is so important. It says here that it's not for earthly life for evil human desires, but rather for, let's say it again, for the will of God. Okay. That is why we're here. For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do. Now, what does that mean? Everyone in this time was very clearly evident what that meant and what that was about. And people had horribly destructive lives toward them, as well as some of them victimizing others. Very, very brutal times. And if you don't think it's like that now, it's very much like that now, even in the 21st century. We live in kind of a bubble right here in the United States, and it will last for a while. History says it will not last forever. And there are even signs that it's starting to deteriorate, historic signs. But that's just what happens, but God's wills will continue to happen. But some people today are living outside the boundaries of God's moral will, and you're wondering, listen, you're wondering why life isn't working out better. Now, you can be a follower of Jesus, but you've never really surrendered everything to God. You are, maybe something's happened to you, but control is a huge thing for you. And so you've been kind of a nice person, but you've never really, you have always wanted to dictate to God your terms. I will do this and no more, God. And now you're wanting God's direction for your life. You know what will happen to you? You will come up against God's providential will and God's moral will, because whenever you ask for God's direction in your life, it's always a call, and we sang it in some of the songs, and appreciate what's going on in the music in all of our venues. Songs like, I surrender all to you. Because you cannot have God's input. God will guide you into his best will, but you can't just get God's input to say, okay, God, thanks for giving me exactly what you want. I'm not ready for that yet. I'm going to do this now. He won't even give you the information. But we want it, don't we? But don't you wish that life could just be, you could see down the road for the next 20 miles, well lit? Do you know what I mean? It's just not like that. There's all kinds of curves. So let me look at, because we need to understand this when it comes to God's will, God's moral will. There are two kinds of sin in the Bible. You can write these in here. First is, these are kind of technical words. It's important to understand what they are and how they differ. First is the sin of commission. Sins of commission. Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? By no means. We died to sin. How can we live in it any longer? And really what this is talking about, and sometimes I get pushback on cards and whatever, because I say, if you're a Christian, you need to be doing certain things in your life. And I get put, well, God, I thought it was just all by grace. Well, of course it is. That's what Paul is saying here. But what he is absolutely saying is this: anyone who has really experienced this grace is not going to have a strategy of saying, you know what, I'm going to step out and hop in the sack with this other lady while I'm married, and then I'll work it out. I'll patch it up with my wife later. And bank on that. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do, then I'll ask God to forgive me in a month or so. You know, no follower of Jesus would ever dream of doing something like that. And that's where I would say, and even someone at the very most radical on a position of grace would also agree with me here, and they would say, someone like that is not a follower of Jesus. They're not. And so what this is saying here is not perfection by any means. It's not that you're not going to have flaws and that you're not going to have issues in your life, but this call to holiness, you know what it is? It's a call. Look, some of you don't understand that a deep ingrained stubbornness is sin. Because we're supposed to honor one another and submit to one another. But what happened? We grit our teeth and we dig in and we want it our way. And those are really tough things. And that's where we need to submit these things to one another. And that could be, I absolutely want to do things my way in this. So but I see people all the time that are saying they're followers of Jesus, and they are, listen, they're blatantly just kind of shining God on in their sexual practices, their financial practices, a lot of these things. And they're just wanting to say, oh, yeah, God's forgiven me by grace, blah, 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 blah. And they're just going, yeah, well, you know, I'm just kind of blowing on God's grace. Paul is saying, look, alarms, alarms, alarms. He's not saying a sinless life. He's saying even with our best intention to want to be following after Jesus, we are still going to blow it and need God's grace. But what he is not saying is someone who says they're a Christian and just blatantly continue to just go out there and do whatever they want to do and just say, oh yeah, God's grace is going to be there for me. Uh-uh. He's saying, you have died to sin, is what he's saying here. So, you know, some of you, if you want to look at God's will in your life, you might need to look real closely here because you're never going to get it as long as you just blow off God in this area. But the other one is this. And so the question is, what are you doing outside the moral will of God in your life? You might need to answer that for yourself. But the other one are the sins of omission then. And anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins, okay? And but I think what that it means for us is not you can have 1,001 things that you should be doing. I mean, I know I should be recycling, and sometimes I throw the plastic bottle in the garbage. So it's not saying that. It means things like this. I know there's someone that I should be reconciling with, even if they're not going to be in my life because they're not a safe person. But I know in my heart I have never forgiven them. Those are sins of omission, okay? And then you're wanting to get God's will for your life, but God's providential will, where he sent his son to die for us because we needed our sins forgiven. We all need a savior when we want to take God's merit of saving us, but we don't want to offer that grace to someone else. And God's moral will, where you have sins of omission, where you're choosing not to forgive. How do you think God's going to give you personal direction in your life? It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So, helping others. It could just be generosity. I think sins of omission for many, you're blowing off God in your finances. How you handle your finances, your generosity. You know, I use this number all the time. 2 represents 2 billion people that live on less than what? Less than $2 a day, right? And we've never had an age where we've had so many people. This is the age where we've had more rich, wealthy Christians ever in the history of the world, and they're concentrated in the United States of America. And we have the sense of omission there. So, but you know, we can just be, you know, I just want to give you a word of assurance here. It's, you know, we look at all of this and we get overwhelmed and we just think, my goodness, how am I going to live up to all of this? And I remember over at my brother's house way back in the day when video games were first starting, you know, there's games like, do you remember, you know, godly games like Donkey Kong? Do you remember any of you? But the one I'm thinking of had really cool graphics. You remember Asteroids? Do you remember that? and you have kind of little triangle thing, and you have these weird little asteroids, and they're swirling back and forth, and then the music gets more and more urgent, and then they're coming, and they're surrounding you, and you're there in your little ship, but then you have that button right in the middle, and that button is what it's called, hyperspace. Isn't that what it's called? And you push the button, and then whoosh, and you jump to a whole new place, and you start all over again. I think for us, when all this stuff is crowding in on us and we go, oh, yeah, I know, I've blown it there, but I think we can push the hyper grace button. And we can just say, you know what, all this stuff's coming in on me. You know, I know where I am. I know I can be stubborn. I know I can be unforgiving. I know hyper grace. And I'm going to submit myself. I'm going to do what I need to do to make this relationship work. I'm going to do what I need to do to make to be obedient to God in my finances. I know what I need to do in order to be gracious and helpful with other people. Hyper grace. I need God's grace in my life. And that's well within God's plan for you. And you can find God's personal plan. Look, here's a great, great quote from one of my mentors named Philip Yancey. And he says this. Because he just says, you know, sometimes it's kind of a blur getting the precise will of God in a precise moment. But this is what he says. And I've seen this in my life also. He says, I have learned that faith means trusting in advance what will only make sense in reverse. Because you see, if you try to treat God, you wonder what this was. Do you remember the genie where you kind of do this and it kind of comes out? We want to treat God like a genie, to where we want to ask requests of him because we think we know what's best in life. When in reality, it's just kind of saying, God, you've given me some wisdom, but really, I know nothing compared to you. Help me to live life the way that you want me to live it. I give my life to you. I surrender my life to you. And when you do that, you will have a security and a joy and a peace you could never have any other way. So let's pray.